All right, let's turn on over to James chapter 5. Good morning. And after today, we'll probably be about halfway through James 5. To build some more familiarity with the passage, we're going to read all of chapter 5. I kind of have spent the past couple weeks looking at 1 through 6, or 1 through 5, actually. So we'll look at verse 6 through 9 today. And there's actually some pretty cool stuff. Again, James is a really good book, and hopefully this is helpful to you because we slowed down and looked at it a little bit more thoughtfully maybe than previously, at least for me. I know I have, because James 5 chapters, I mean, I could read that in one quick setting, right? It's gone. So it's really good to just take the time to look over this stuff. Again, James is, being that he is practical, he's intentional on why he's not making this a huge book, right? Huge letter. It is short and sweet, practical, gets straight to the point, so I don't want to belabor that. But I do think there's stuff along the way that we can really grasp from this passage. So let's read all of chapter 5, and then we'll get started. Come now, you rich, weep and howl for your miseries which are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted, and your garments have become moth-eaten. Your gold and silver have rusted, and the rust will be a witness against you and will consume your flesh like fire. It is in the last days that you have stored up your treasure. Behold, the pay of the laborers who mowed your fields, which has been withheld by you, cries out against you, and the outcry of those who did the harvesting has reached the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. You have lived luxuriously on the earth and led a life of wanton pleasure. You have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. You have condemned and put to death the righteous man. He does not resist you. Therefore, be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. The farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it, until it gets the early and late rains. You too, be patient. Strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is near. Do not complain, brethren, against one another, so that you yourselves may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing right at the door. As an example, brethren, of suffering and patience, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. We count those blessed who endured. You have heard of the endurance of Job and have seen the outcome of the Lord's dealings, that the Lord is full of compassion and is merciful. But above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by earth with any other oath, but your yes is to be yes, and your no, no, so that you may not fall under judgment. Is anyone among you suffering? Then he must pray. Is anyone cheerful? He is to sing praises. Is anyone among you sick? Then he must call for the elders of the church, and they are to pray over him, anointing him with the oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer offered in faith will restore the one who is sick, and the Lord will raise him up. And if he has committed sins, they will be forgiven him. Therefore, confess your sins to one another and pray for one another so that you may be healed. The effective prayer of a righteous man can accomplish much. Elijah was a man with a nature like ours, and he prayed earnestly that it would not rain. And it did not rain on the earth for 3 years and 6 months. Then he prayed again, and the sky poured rain, and the earth produced its fruit. My brethren, if any among you strays from the truth and one turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his ways will save his soul from death and cover a multitude of sins. All right, sweet. So, last couple weeks, we've talked about the first part. Again, the rich, they oppress. They have this nature of oppressing. You see this laid out. We've looked at that a lot, so we're not going to spend too much time on that. Then, again, last week particularly, we talked about the Lord of Sabaoth, the Lord of Hosts, the God who has all the armies backing him, and the whole world is, it doesn't matter who comes up against him, he is the Lord of all. And nobody is going to win that fight, and he hears even the prayers and the cries of those who are unjustly oppressed, right? And so this is where, you know, culture has kind of taken this to an extreme, and really culture has taken, you know, this whole thing of social justice and those who are oppressed, and they've really taken that to an extreme. And then they try to basically build a false narrative on who's oppressing who, and you know, reparations need to be made. And I don't even want to go into that. I've heard that there's talk about reparations already being made in different states and yada, yada, yada. Anyways, what we see here, though, there still is, I know we definitely recognize the world's culture has definitely gone off the wagon. You know, they're definitely going off that, you know, social justice really far. But there is still this aspect where God still hears those who are oppressed, right? And there are people that are exploited and taken advantage of. And God will absolutely hear them. And that's why, you know, maybe we want to be involved in all the social justice type stuff, right? That's not really the right battle to be fighting. If there are people who are oppressed, I mean, obviously, if you see somebody who is being oppressed and exploited, it would be nice to bring that to somebody's attention, right? If you see it presently. But ultimately, we know that God is the one that He's in control. And anybody who has been unjustly wrong, God is going to bring vengeance. And this is actually a really comforting thing when you really grasp the magnitude of God has got your back. And you know what? You could go throughout your whole life and be wronged your whole life and have lost everything and had nothing that all your friends had. You could have nothing that everybody else always had, and it was all wrong, and it was totally unfair, and it doesn't matter at the end of the day if you are right with Jesus Christ and you go on home to the Lord. And so this is where I think James is really comforting the Christians in the beginning of James, is that, hey, there are people who are wronging. What is our perspective, though, as the Christian, those who are righteous? And so that's where we're going to look at verse 6. James is writing to the rich person in this perspective. What he's saying, you have condemned and put to death the righteous man. Again, this is an unrighteous, wealthy person who is oppressing, not just because they have money, but you have condemned and put to death the righteous man. Now, what does the righteous man do in this verse, though? Or what does he not do? He doesn't resist. What is our responsibility as Christians? It's not necessarily to go out and fight these battles against those who are oppressing. It is to fight the spiritual battles. Now, you guys probably will be quick to answer this. Who is the Christian to resist? The devil, right? From James chapter 4. So, it's not that James is being contradictory. James says in James 4, he's saying, hey, submit to God, resist the devil. And then he turns around to chapter 5 and he's saying, hey, you're being oppressed by wrong people. And some people might say this is the work of the devil, but he actually encourages them not to resist in this sense. I'm not supposed to resist. Well, I'm supposed to resist evil, right? Resisting the devil. This is kind of a something that I think there's several different ways I thought about kind of going into this. You know, the law is actually kind of helpful in some ways in our day and age. You know, there's trials, there's systems, and there is a system of courts where it can be misused by those who are exploiting the process, right? James chapter 2, the rich are dragging you into court, and the Christian is going to be attacked by which, you know, by legally, right? Eventually, they're going to put up a rule because the law of the land is obviously the best thing ever, the world says. And they're going to put up a rule and say it's wrong to try to convert people to Christianity, right? It's wrong if you'd say it's wrong for a man to be with a man and a woman to be with a woman. If you hold that view, then you are homophobic and you are evil, right? That's what the law of the land might come to say. And so there's this aspect that, you know, the rich or the people that exploit the Christians, they're going to use the court system, and they're going to use that to legally bind you and to make it seem like you are the bad person. And look, it's in the law. You broke the law, right? You look back at Daniel's day, and great example. They couldn't find anything against Daniel. Daniel was a righteous man, and they tried to throw him under the bus, and the only thing they could find was he kept praying to this other god, right? And so they try to change the law to make him look guilty. And he was guilty according to their law, not according to God's law. So there is this aspect where that will be used against a Christian. But there also is an aspect to the law, and I'm talking from a physical perspective, the law of the land, that it actually, it does serve some purposes. And one of the purposes that I really appreciate about it is that it protects you as an individual from having to have vengeance yourself. Now, I don't want to be a blood avenger, you know. If somebody were to kill somebody that was close to me, which this would be a very hard situation, right? I don't want to really have the burden of trying to bring this to justice, personally. Now, I've definitely not contemplated it a whole lot, but I've definitely thought through, if somebody is going to get in the way of my family and they're going to harm my family, I will, to my last breath, protect them. But again, there's a cool aspect to the law that that I think God has provided it this way, is that, you know, when people usually are wronged, they have a tendency to try to, and this is don't hear me out. Jesus is going to go on and say, you've heard an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, right? And that's something in the Old Testament. It's a really, really important way to society should really run, right? Especially when everybody's just letting everybody get free passes. Oh, you did this terrible thing, you know, and I don't even want to discuss some of the things that people do. And then they become almost idolized, you know. And they don't even, you know, you could totally wrong somebody and totally kill somebody and take so many things from somebody. And sometimes those people are idolized. You know, you can just look at Netflix. Anyways, kind of going off on that path a little bit. That's a little bit of a rant. But there is a tendency when somebody is wrong to want to repay. And that's not necessarily wrong. I think that's God-given. There's a sense of justice. There's a sense of things that need to be vindicated, things that are done right. But there is also this aspect that when somebody is wronged, in the midst of anger or being wronged, sometimes judgment is clouded on what is just and what is fair, right? Well, you did this, and this was so uncalled for that I'm going to do this, and I'm going to even bring back more pain onto you, right? I can't believe that you did that to me, and I'm going to wrong you even more. And what does that do to the individual who's trying to do the repay? You know, sometimes it's not out of the right mindset. And that's where sometimes, again, this is a whole other can of worms, but maybe there's a difference between revenge and justice. Well, I just want revenge. They took something from me, and I want to take something from them. And that's not really, I would say, Jesus' mindset. Well, look, we're going to look back in Matthew. That's not really the mindset of Jesus. Really, the mindset is one of justice. God is absolutely fair. You took this, you will repay. Not one of vengeance, revenge. And God is one of vengeance, which is, again, this is why I'm treading lightly, and I don't want to go into a whole other conversation. But really, the Christian is to have this mindset that anything that you can take from me in this life, in any way you can wrong me, is not going to even amount to anything that's worth me losing or compromising my personal integrity. Right? Hopefully that made a little bit of sense. There's nothing that somebody could wrong you for in this life. You know, don't fear those who kill the body. There's nothing that somebody could do to you that really would make it okay for you to do things that are ungodly yourself. The righteous does not resist, James says, to this rich oppressor.
As you were reading that my mind went to Matthew chapter 10, and you touched on it. It says, do not fear those who can kill the body, but are unable to kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. You know, that's teachings of Jesus. He tells us who we are. You know, he lets us know that we're not to fear what man can do to us. What can man do to us? Send us home, you know. But fear God, fear Jesus, the one who can destroy both our soul and our body.
Excellent point. And then you see the value of the soul, right? Yep. Each person is a soul. And any way that we can try to, you know, if one of the greatest ways that Jesus showed us his love and the love of the Father is forgiveness, right? So if forgiveness is the road and I show forgiveness, sometimes that's a greater picture of Christ to a world than trying to repay.
So much of life is about perspective. It's how you view stuff. We operate based on our perspective. Is your perspective, you know, true or not? That's irrelevant in one sense, because you're going to operate upon it. And so getting the right perspective, and that's really what a lot of James is driving at, is making sure we get the right perspective. First of all, okay, someone wronged me, cut me off in traffic, did whatever. It's like, oh, I want vengeance. Whoa, hold on a second. What have I done to the Lord? Okay. Maybe that's not that big of a deal. And second of all, so that's the first perspective. It's like, wow, someone might have wronged me, but, you know, Christ goes, wow, you know, look at what the Lord has, what you've done to the Lord, and yet he forgave you. So, well, that should change our perspective a lot. And then also the perspective, like 2 Corinthians 4, 16 and 17. Therefore, we do not lose heart, though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. This is the key verse here in 17. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. While we not look not at things which are seen, but things that are unseen, which are not... For the things which are seen are temporal, but things which are not seen are eternal. And so that's really the right perspective. Whatever we're going through here, what we get in glory is going to be so much greater. And if you look at it, again, from that perspective, it's like, okay, that guy cut me in on traffic. That person stole. I got a raw deal at work. Whatever you want to put in there, it's like, whoa. Glory, the faith picture says, wow, it's going to be so much greater. So I can take those hits. I can take, you know, being treated unjustly as James drives out. I can do all of that because I have that right perspective, and I know that my reward is not here but in heaven.
Excellent points. And this is really going to tie over into where I want to go in Matthew. We're going to talk. I want to see, James is actually, he makes reference to a lot of things that Jesus makes reference to. And you see that, I mean, in verse 6, this is a picture that we're going to find in Matthew chapter 5. And in verse 12, you see that he talks about, let your, you know, yes be yes, no, no. I mean, we've heard Jesus say that. He uttered that in the flesh, Jesus on earth, right? So, yeah, really good comments from both of you guys. It's all about perspective. And that's where I think James is really hitting on here. Like you were mentioning, I think that's exactly the point. James is going to challenge somebody's perspective in this text. So we are told to resist the devil. Again, James 4 makes that point clear. The resisting there is in a state of, it seems like, humility and submission to God, right? Because what he's talking about before that, earlier in chapter 4, is the fact that you have wished or desired to be a friend with the world. And we know that the mindset on the flesh is hostile toward God. He's saying, you guys are trying to be friends with the world. You know, you're desiring to be in the position of the unrighteous. He's saying, resist the devil, submit to God. Really, that's the communication there. Resisting the devil is going to be hand in hand with submitting to God. Well, what is God? So then we come to James 5. This not resisting evil and repaying evil for evil kind of is a picture of submitting to God. So in effect, when you are not resisting and trading like for like, you are still resisting the devil. Why? Because you're doing the righteous path. The righteous does not resist. Again, this is not me. This is within a context, and this is not to say anytime somebody tries to wrong you, you know, they try to steal your kids or something, you just, oh, I'm not going to. That's not the point I'm trying to make. It's all about perspective. It's always about noticing what is most important. What are the things that are eternally valued? And so let's go on over to Matthew chapter 5. Did Jesus resist the devil? He absolutely did. I mean, he totally demolished the devil. But, you know, you have examples of Jesus resisting the devil. Did Jesus, how was his interaction when he was put on trial himself? With Pilate and, you know, Caiaphas and the courts and everything. He didn't really try to fight it by the means that a man would, did he? He just said, it's, I think in Matthew's account, he just says, it is as you say to Pilate. Because Pilate's just, he's saying, hey, I heard you're a king. He said, yeah, I'm king. And in John's passage, I believe that's where it talks about, he's like, I am not a king of this world. My kingdom is not of this realm. If it were, my servants would be fighting for me. You know, his kingdom was not earthly. And so Jesus showed through his life a great example of somebody who did not even resist, even when brought to the courts. Again, Jesus was very strong, and he wasn't a pushover, though. So Matthew chapter 5, let's start in verse 38. We're going to eventually actually get through the end of the chapter. Matthew 5, verse 38. Jesus is saying here, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Again, Jesus is going to challenge the viewpoints of the Jewish people. You've heard this, eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn to him the other also. That sounds pretty interesting. If anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. Whoever forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks of you, and do not turn away from him who wants to borrow from you. You have heard it is said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. We're going to stop there right now. Jesus, you know, I don't think it's this picture. Sometimes, and this is actually going to tie in really well because we're going to talk about patience right after this. You know, usually when people are patient or giving or sometimes, you know, I've seen this a lot with kids, unfortunately. You know, but kids just turn into big adults, right, as we've heard many times up front. And there's a lot of times, well, they wronged me, but all right, I'll give them the other cheek. It's a defiant spirit almost, like they slap you on the right. All right. I'm going to be defiant, and I'm just going to give you the other cheek. Sometimes that I've experienced that, you know, the kids, and hey, they'll take the I was like this as a kid, so this is why I resonate with it well. Hey, you want to, I did something wrong? You want to discipline me? I'll take the discipline and give me one more. Sometimes that mindset can be, you know, shown, and I've seen it many times with younger kids and stuff. And that is not the thing that I think he's trying to point out here. Really, it's somebody, if they wrong you, it's really not that big of a deal. It goes back to the perspective thing, right? They slap one cheek, you give them the other also. And it, the thing is, when you are really just defiant and just angry, and that's why you do extra stuff because you're just trying to prove a point, a lot of times that actually wears you out in the long run, right? It's a lot harder to maintain that. And so then the lack of good attitude in that will actually show through in a different way, maybe. Jesus he's just challenging these people, and he's like, you've heard these things, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. And in the kingdom of heaven, I mean, this is not the way that we roll. keep going on. For sake of time, 46 through 48, this is where we get to a very common passage you guys are all probably very familiar with, For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? If you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Therefore, you are to be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. Then we finally got to Matthew 5:48. Well, this is what he was just talking about before it. And what was Jesus' mindset on the cross? Hey, forgive them. Man, I don't think it was a defiant spirit, you know, just one of... He was genuine. And then you look at Stephen in Acts 7. I mean, he's literally preaching to these guys. They're stoning him. And he's just saying, hey, don't hold their sin against them. How do you do that? How do you actually get to the point where you're being killed by people and you can actually look past that from a spiritual perspective? Again, James is, I'm just bringing out something, but I think he's just referencing things and they're just little tidbits along the way. He's familiar with the teachings of Jesus. So he's not going to be expounding upon this to teach again on these things. He'd be familiar with, well, the half-brother of Jesus, right? He's pretty close to him. I'm sure he heard very many things that were similar to this. And he actually even saw the full life of Christ, and he saw the produce that came from that. So he's speaking from experience. So, again, patience is really what's going to get us through. And this is where I think James 5 makes the next point. So let's go back to James chapter 5. Any comments on this, by the way?
Just one thing, too, and what Jesus was, what Jesus had to say while he was alive on earth is kind of incomplete in light of what he thus speaks through the apostles and the epistles from heaven. So because he probably could have wisely garnered justice on earth through the Roman system if he wanted to, but he used his death to defeat Satan's ideas, and he also he remained silent under the Roman system, knowing their law and knowing the bigger picture of things, because he offered himself as a sacrifice to usher in this new covenant, which, you know, I appreciate what you're going over in James 5, this loving your neighbor as yourself. You learn how to love yourself from God's perspective first, then you move into the third position. And then the one thing about the United States of America is that our form of government doesn't exist anywhere in the world, although we have left this form, okay? When you look at Romans chapter 13, God causes governments to come into existence. Ours is very unique. Our declaration is more important than our Constitution. If you can't use the Constitution, that means the Declaration of Independence and its preamble has really little or no meaning or value anymore. That's sad. But under our system, Romans 13 is very specific that these devoted leaders are to render service as ministers of God, to praise those who do good, punish those who do evil. But this is the love of God. In that system is that the love of God would, and the will of God would be expressed for the level of the crime committed, say, against you or your family. It's designed to provide justice. Right. Yeah. And if it does not provide justice, that's the injustice. The system is supposed to work that the clarity of the error or the sin against others is held accountable, but the perpetrator is pointed in the direction of Jesus Christ under the same system. That's love. Accountability with truth provides repentance. That's the change of the mindset. That's where it leads us to make those turns.
Excellent point, yeah. And that's kind of what I was making reference to. I didn't want to spend too much time going down that road, but I am appreciative for the law of the land. And you do see that from Romans 13. That is where I mean, the Jews, they had a much better nation than so many other nations. I don't like pointing fingers too much, but I'm going to point some fingers. If you look at Africanized nations, you know, Africa and South America, a lot of those places, they've been far from God for a long time. They have not had justice for a really long time. And there is a principle that, you know, if you follow, that's why I think God laid out for the Jews, the Jewish people, that eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. There is a principle that is, God is an absolute just God. Absolutely just. And that's why he had to send Jesus in the first place. Because to be just, there is penalty for sin, right? And that was the only way that he could reconcile us to himself.
So why aren't we patient? Because we think we know better, right? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. We grab the wheels of control because, yeah, I know more. I can take care of this. Yeah. Fear. We don't know what's going to happen. Oh, I got to take care of it. I got to take care of this now. And, you know, and it's really a bad deal because when we do that, we rob God of the chance to work in our lives. And he's like, okay, fine, do it your way. But it's not going to turn out as great as he could. And we also rob ourselves because when we are patient, even through the hard situation, we don't know how this thing's going to end. When God comes in and goes way beyond what we could even possibly think, that opportunity builds faith inside of us. It's like, wow, look at what you did, Lord. And so then it's like, next time we have another trial, it's like, okay, last time he didn't drop me on my head. I'll trust him this time. So really, you know, it's hard to do. Because we want, as human beings, to control. But if you want great faith, start letting God work.
Great points. Yeah, thanks, guys. Endurance, just takes me back to James chapter 1, right? Consider it all joy when you encounter various trials. So, well, we're not making it as far as I thought we were going to today. But this is okay. It's good, actually. You guys get to have me a little bit longer. I know you guys are ready to see the close of James, you know, James 5, and get the overview in, and you guys get to have me probably for a little bit longer. So, patience is where we're kind of heading towards on this topic. Even if there are things that we see that are unjust, even in the way that the law should be, as you mentioned, it should be functioning a certain way. And as it gets further from God, the less justice we see done. And then it gets very upsetting, right? From an earthly perspective, man, God, is he winning? Well, the God of this world is Satan. And it looks dark from the world's perspective. This is where we are challenged through Scripture to look at things from a heavenly perspective. And God is absolutely winning, right? And the world, unfortunately, they pervert justice. They pervert a lot of things that God has placed. So we're gonna kind of move on from verse 6. Following that thread of thought, we see in verse 7, in James chapter 5, verse 7, therefore be patient, therefore, just so going over 1 through 6, be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. So what's really going to get us through, as you made reference, Larry, to 2 Corinthians 4, this idea that we're looking towards the glory. Right? Light and momentary affliction, Paul says. Well, it feels like it's a long time. It feels like it hurts really bad. And James 1, he actually does say endurance. And we know from, I think even Peter's writing, perseverance is a word that's used, right? Perseverance doesn't imply, you know, it doesn't make me feel like, oh, this is going to be over really quick. Perseverance makes me feel like I'm going to have to persevere, right? Endurance, again, running the long distance. I mean, Nikki, she's an incredible athlete running. You want to run a 100-mile race this year? It takes some endurance and some perseverance in that process. And, you know, that's where we're to be patient because there's a tendency to become impatient. Oh, I don't really know what's going to happen. I'm not really sure what's around the corner. And verse 7, therefore be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. The farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it until it gets the early and late rains. You too, be patient. Strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is near. Do not complain, brethren, against one another, so you yourselves may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing right at the door. Wow, I have so many thoughts on this passage. Let me just see if I can consolidate some of these thoughts. I actually wanted to let you guys get out early today. It's actually my intention. And it is 5 minutes early. So I think maybe we'll just say we're only getting through verse 6 today. And I'll save all my stuff that I have on this, because I really just don't want to open that door without being able to kind of see it through. Maybe we'll just get out a little bit early today. And yeah, you guys get to have me next week. Thanks.